The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. You're joining We the People Radio here with Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
We would be nowhere without our engineer, Bob Martin. All the music will come from him. Bill and I are on the other side of the desk. We're not allowed to touch any of the buttons.
Hands off.
Hands off the buttons.
We're just a mouthpiece.
We barely get the headphones on. You got yours on backwards again today, as a matter of fact.
Hey, I'm right, I'm left, I'm left, I'm right.
It's my favorite part.
That's why we don't allow him to touch the buttons.
Exactly. He's all over crying out.
Holy cow, it sounds totally different.
See, I knew it would. That's just part of the fun. So, all right, we are always talking about something that will probably make you angry. So this is a good decaffeinated coffee show, because you're just not going to need the caffeine. And today's topic, you're really not going to need the caffeine, because it's complicated and frustrating and just really doesn't have any clear-cut answers. A lot of times the topics that we bring have obvious answers. This one, I don't know, it's like a giant minefield. So we're going to wander through the minefield today with our friend Tom Malams up there in Klamath County, Oregon. We really appreciate him jumping on with us today. He's a Klamath County commissioner. That's kind of, for some states have boards of supervisors, some states have commissioners. So it just depends on which kind you are. And I'm trying to get his bio up here. Born and raised in Medford, Oregon. Folks came to Oregon during the Depression. So he started in the grocery business at age 14 and brought him to the Klamath Basin after he graduated from high school. And we want to know more, Tom, about the disagreement with the Jackson County Draft Board. But that led to him being in the Marine Corps. I'm assuming they didn't want to let you in. Is that the deal?
No, they said they were going to draft me when I was in college, and I said, no, you're not going to draft me, and I proved them wrong. They did not draft me. I enlisted.
You know, because Bill says, well, kind of.
That's kind of like, you can't fire me, I quit.
Yeah. You can't make me do it. I'm going to do it anyway. Anyway, and you are you grow hay up there?
Yes, I am a county commissioner, but I'm also an irrigator. We only have 150 acres and a little bit of custom work, so we're not a very big operation. But I do want to make that very clear. I've already had one ethics complaint against me by some of my opposition, I guess you might call them.
Yeah.
An ethics commission in Oregon said, no, he's one small irrigator out of a huge pool. It's not a conflict of interest in any way, but I'd like to make that clear so that there's no question that I am an irrigator also.
Oh, I wondered, I was like, what kind of conflict of interest? Okay, so they were basically saying that you were trying to, you know, feather your own nest or something.
Correct, yes. Yeah. You know, have to remember the last two commissioners, or two of the last three commissioners, they were also irrigators within the project, but they agreed with these agreements, and no one ever questioned that part of it. So, you know.
If you disagree, you will be questioned.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Imagine that.
We will come and find you. There are just a ton of little housekeeping details we have to explain to people. We're going to be talking about the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement. Everybody calls it the KBRA. But it stands for Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement. If you go to our webpage at wethepeopleradio.us, there is a link there for the entire agreement, so you don't have to take our word for it or anything. You can go there and read it yourself. And there are some companion agreements. One of them is the Klamath Hydro Settlement Agreement, KHSA. So we're going to throw those terms around, and sometimes it gets a little... I'm hoping it'll get repetitive rather than confusing, but... Talk to people when we talk about project irrigators. A lot of folks don't know what that means. When you talk about a project irrigator, you know, give us a little history of where that came from.
Sure. Sure. Back in about the turn of the century, the area here was being populated, and the entire Klamath Basin on both sides of the California-Oregon border. In the Bureau of Reclamation, and I think there was Army Corps of Engineers, they came in and they created the Klamath Reclamation Project, which was a huge undertaking because they did most of their canal work and everything with horses and teams of horses, and they didn't have the big equipment they have today. So it was a very large undertaking, but they've got, I can't remember how many miles of ditches and canals here in the Klamath Basin, on, again, on both sides of the border. But that was the beginning of irrigated agriculture here on a big, big scale, and it opened up the door for hundreds of thousands of acres of productive land. And they, in the process, they drained what was in the earlier days Tule Lake. They drained that out, and that was very, very fertile ground. Somebody said one time, he says you might have 1,000 feet of goose poop out there or something for fertilizer. I'm not sure exactly what's there, but it grows tremendous crops, and that started the process. And then after the war, they had a lottery system here for some of the veterans coming home would draw lottery numbers for homesteads, and that's how a lot of the people came here. Is the we had the internment camp here also, but they came here for this lottery drawing to get land that was fertile irrigated ground that they could get and homestead, build their homes on it, raise their families, and they were promised water because that was that in the state of Oregon, water is a private property right which is attached to the ground. So that's where the project came from. One of the real oddities, though, is that the Klamath project was never designed to have government control forever and ever and ever. The Bureau of Reclamation controls that and manages it, but they were never really supposed to have that permanent role. In other areas, they have been dropped out. In the irrigator districts, the individual districts, they ended up controlling the project and the management of it. And why I bring that up is it's a very plain, not a simple solution to a lot of the problems here, but one of the, what I call a no-brainer, because in 2001 when they had the water shut off here in the Klamath Basin on the project, it was mainly because it was a federal reclamation project under federal rules and statutes. If you take it out of the federal hand and put it into private ownership, not all the things go away, but a lot of those federal nexuses go away. And it's handled completely different on the ESP issues. You wouldn't, I don't think, have a biological opinion any longer that you have to deal with.
And so, back up for that, when you say the biological opinion, our kind of premise for this is people are starting to hear about this more and more and more, and it's super confusing. I tried to explain a lot of this to Bill last week, I guess. We were in the car driving, and he started asking me questions, and I said, okay, it's a bad Q&A topic. Let me, you know, kind of lay it out for you, and then let's do Q&A after that. I realize people don't really know what all this stuff means. So as we go, like, for the people who don't deal with stuff like this, the biological opinion, I mean, obviously there are many kinds, but the one that affects you guys, can you magnify that for us?
Yeah, I can give you just a real thumbnail sketch of it. It comes out periodically on consultation, and it basically says how much water needs to go downstream, measured, I think, generally speaking, at Iron Gate Dam, and can dictate the lake levels of Klamath Lake. So we have, for many, many years, we had conflicting biological opinions. We had one for the suckerfish, which was lake levels, and we had another one for salmon that were Klamath River flows measured at Iron Gate. Well, if you have to have a certain amount of water at Iron Gate, it takes water away from Klamath Lake, which drops the lake level. So they were absolutely in conflict with one another, and naturally the environmentalists and stuff, they want them both. Well, you can't have them both. And it's been proven now that the suckerfish thrive in Klamath Lake with with a lot less water than the biological opinion says they have to have.
And Klamath,
well, that hasn't,
well, and
that
Klamath
hasn't
Lake
yet.
Was made for the project.
Yes, it was. It's the designation or the purpose of the Klamath Lake to date, still today, is it's 100% for irrigated agriculture storage water. Under these new agreements, that will change. The purpose of the project and specifically Klamath Lake will be shared evenly with fish and wildlife, which has never happened before. So if you have to share that water, they claim it won't change the water allocations, but I'm sorry, I wasn't born yesterday. I don't believe that for one second. They have done everything they can to take the water away from the irrigators that were promised water, especially in the project, and even in the state of Oregon, prior appropriations doctrine is being skewed and mishandled and redefined on a regular basis by our Oregon Water Resources Department and our governor's office. And it's not in our favor. It's every time it comes out to some of these things, it will always be swayed and on the side of the fish or the environment. Which I'm not against fish. I'm not against the environment, but there has to be a balance, and that balance has been gone for so long. I don't think these federal and state agencies would recognize it if it was staring them in the face. I don't think they would, because they automatically side with fish, bugs, wolves. It doesn't matter what it is.
Right.
People are last on the list.
Well, it never... That was Bill's coffee there, sorry.
Yeah, but I didn't do it.
He didn't do it. I bashed it against the microphone. Sounds of a struggle in here. Well, that was an unceremonious way of saying we have to take a break, I guess. Oh my gosh! Hey, when we come back, we're gonna talk about all this stuff. But I hope you will, if you're at home and you're listening, and especially if you're listening on your computer, go to the webpage. I'm downloading some PDF documents as we speak, so refresh your page periodically and take a look at some of this. We don't want to just tell you stuff, and then there are lots of differing opinions on all this, so you don't have to take anybody's opinion. We'll be able to, you know, you should be able to back all this up with real facts. So anyway, we're going to come back with Tom Malams. We're going to talk some more about the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement and all of its many moving, disastrous parts when we return. Or not. Something happened.
You will always return.
Yeah, we are the home of technical difficulties here momentarily. Be right back.
What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
Time is truly wasted. There's no guarantee. Smile is in the making. You got to fight the powers that be. Got so many voices.
A target-rich environment today. We're going to put Bob's musical skills to work today. All right, we're talking with Tom Malams. He is a Klamath County Commissioner. If you live in a different state that calls them supervisors for a county, then same basic idea. Lives in Klamath Falls and has been... Tom, you've been involved with this Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement thing since, I think you told me, 2005?
Very deeply involved. I was involved in it from the very, very beginning. I think it started in about 2004, somewhere in there, but the actual meeting started in 2005 in earnest. But they started as a FERC relicensing of the dams, and it morphed into this settlement agreement and agreements, plural, and I started as a member of Klamath Off-Project Water Users, and I think it was 2004, 2005, and then I was voted as president in 2008. And then I was attending those closed-door meetings on a very regular basis.
So, okay, before we get to that part, because we definitely want to go through that, and we have some documents on there for folks, how many people are considered project irrigators? I don't know if it's, maybe is it better to say what type of economic production? I mean, it's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. There's about 1,400 to 1,500 family farms in the project area. There's about 200,000 acres of what it was originally, somewhere in that area. Approximately 1,400 to 1,500 family farms. It varies up and down, obviously, but it's getting to be more and more of almost like corporate farming is what's being able to survive all this onslaught, the things that are going on. So the actual family farms, small family farms, are getting to be a thing of the past, it seems like.
And the products they produce, you know,
they produce everything. I mean, from alfalfa to grain to all different kinds of hay, the grass hays, potatoes, mint, garlic, onions.
Horseradish?
Horseradish, oh yes.
Yeah.
I don't want Jackie to forget that one.
I know, I was like...
she would shoot us for that.
I was like, I know there's at least one horseradish, but I think there's like two or three.
Yes. And they're experimenting with all kinds of other different things. I mean, I think there were even some... I think it was cauliflower or cabbage or some other row crops they were trying out, and garlic is getting bigger. And so, I mean, there's a lot of different products being grown on the project and off project also. Not all of those things are grown in the off project area, but we do have some off project areas in the Hildebrand area in Bonanza that are very similar in climate and soils as the lower project down there in the reclamation project.
I want people to know this isn't, you know, three guys, you know, with, you know, 5-acre parcels. You know, this isn't small, a small issue, and it isn't small ground we're talking about. And any idea what kind of money is generated from that?
It's just been estimated somewhere around $600 million a year.
Okay.
In the entire basin, and that's not jump change.
No,
it
isn't.
A lot of dollars, and we're seeing that being whittled down with the downsizing of the project and the off-project area, both drying up land. This year, B and C water users in the project, which have a lesser priority date, they are going without water this year, the majority of them, and some of them are being paid to not irrigate, which is our government's way of transitioning you slowly to not irrigate, and then they get used to being paid to not irrigate, and then one of these days, bang, that payment's not there.
Sure.
And you're out of, then you're done.
So for all the people who are thinking, well, I'm not a farmer, I don't really eat potatoes, I don't care about, I'll switch to rice, I don't care about alfalfa, you know, people a lot of times were thinking, doesn't involve me. Hey, guess what? You're paying for it.
Oh, absolutely. That's our tax dollars.
Yeah, you're going to pay for it.
Yes. But the problem, I think, a lot of this is that there's no accountability of where that money comes from and what's the true objective of some of those programs. Is it to really help those farmers out, or is it to get them used to taking, I'll call it a dole of some sorts, but it's totally wrong to even dry them up. They should not be having that water denied to them because they were promised and guaranteed they would have that water. But they're placating them by giving them a payment. It does look attractive sometimes. Gosh, I'll get so much an acre for, I won't even have to turn the key in my tractor this year, and I'll still get a payment. It'll pay my bills, it'll pay my land payment maybe, and I will survive another year. But that's not the American way as far as I look at it. That's hard work for what you get and not be depending on our federal government specifically to take care of us. I don't want to be in that position. It's not good for the economy. It's not good for the individual people. They can get complacent and lose their strong work ethic that has been very prevalent here in the Klamath Basin very quickly under those kind of scenarios.
Sure, and their kids, you know, their kids, if they go away to school, a lot of them want to come back and work the ground that their family has worked for a long time. And this makes it one of those things where people look at their kids and go, you better figure out something else.
So once you take the money, you can't, like, stop taking the money and get your water back?
You can. I mean, that's for that season.
Right.
You know, it doesn't mean forever. You're not necessarily out forever, but what he's saying is, if they do it to you enough years in a row, then how long before pretty soon it's like, well, you haven't been growing anything anyway. You know,
yeah, you don't need
you're it. Out. And then your ground, you could sell it. It'd be worth
no water.
Nothing.
The ground is not worth very much without the water.
No. And the Klamath Lake, did Klamath Lake exist before the project?
It did to an extent, but it was seasonal. I'll call it seasonal because until the Link River Dam was put in, there was no way to regulate it. It just there were many years when Klamath Lake dried up. The earliest settlers that came through here, Fremont and others, they described it as in the late season as a smelly, bug-infested swamp. That was Klamath Lake. I mean, it's shallow now, but it would almost dry up completely in the late summer months. We're in a drought cycle of sorts right now. In a season like these, there wouldn't be any Klamath Lake. It would be just a big swamp out there with bugs. And well, I guess people nowadays like to call those wetlands.
Yeah.
Be politically correct.
That's
I'll
true.
Call it a wetland, but a wetland is another name for a swamp by definition. So it would be swamp, wetland, whatever you want to call it. It's not something that you'd want in near a town, for sure.
Sure. So they maximized the water storage of the lake. And just a side note, this year the lake has enough water in it to irrigate all the farmers and keep enough water in the river for the fish if they weren't keeping it artificially high with this phony biological opinion for the suckerfish.
Exactly.
How's that, huh?
Exactly. Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah, it just that's like a point number one of that doesn't make any sense.
Right, and there's studies out there. I know we have a water committee that we revived here in Klamath County that's looking into some of these things, and there's studies out there that show that the suckers are declining at higher lake levels, logic was that suckers thrive in the worst water quality you can get. So they're trying to create the best water quality for the cold water fish that are in the lake, but yet it's hurting the sucker fish, which are on the endangered species list. So they're saying they're trying to help the suckers, but they're actually hurting the suckers by keeping those lake levels artificially high.
Is Klamath Lake the only place those sucker fish are found?
No, there's different strains of them. There's Lost Rivers, short nose, and there's actually a different strain up in Clear Lake, and I think there's another one in Gerber Reservoir. I mean, there's all different kinds of strains, but there isn't any pure stock because they get intermixed, and they have some different characteristics, I guess, but they are separate listings on the ESA, so you have to manage them separately. I've been told stories about when they were dredging up in one of the reservoirs that they were down about 12, 13, 14, 15 feet in the mud, and they were doing a channel or something, and here comes some suckerfish flopping out on the ground. Or, you know, they were just kind of dormant. They threw them in a bucket of water, and an hour later, they were swimming around fine. And they were down 10 to 15 feet in the mud. So you can't really kill the suckerfish. I mean,
for endangered.
Yes. Well, they've got the cormorants here and that they've artificially put in here that are eating millions of them. And you've got the artificial lake levels, which are not helping them at all, that are hurting them. And these are all connected to the biological opinion, which if you would reverse that, put the lake levels down, which they had historically done, the lake levels would drop way down. Suckers thrived through that dry cycles. They absolutely thrived. And that's what irrigated agriculture was designed to do, is to drop the lake level down in the late season, which would help the fish out. And instead, they're trying to keep that lake level up at a certain level year-round, which is the worst thing you could do for the suckers.
We're going to re-engineer nature because we're so much smarter. But in the end, in the crosshairs is agriculture. So, a lot of these points that we're going to talk about this afternoon end with, and then agriculture gets shot in the back. That's sort of the theme to all of this.
Well, that's the end game.
It is the end game. We need to take another probably quick break, or we'll have them all at the top of the hour. We'll be back with you. We're speaking with Tom Mallums, who is a Klamath County Commissioner. You are listening to We the People Radio, and I hope you do go to the webpage at some point. It is wethepeopleradio.us, and we've linked up a bunch of different documents and information for you, so if you try to reiterate this to somebody else, you won't get, you know, shot out of the saddle. It's complicated, and we know it. I'll be right back with you.
Beautiful now. Maybe I'll be there to shake your hand. Maybe I'll be there to share the land that I'll be giving away when we all live together. We're talking about together now. Maybe I'll be there to shake your hand. Maybe I'll be there to share the land that I'll be giving away when we all live together. I'm talking about together now.
You're listening to We the People on Community Talk Radio for the North State, AM 1460, KCNR.
Like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down. Like a bridge over troubled water, I will lay me down.
Classic. I knew this was going to be a target-rich environment. Funny. All right. So now that we've kind of laid the groundwork a little bit, we could go on with groundwork for 2 hours, but we won't. Tom, take us into the minefield.
That would be the closed-door meetings, I guess.
Yeah, I think so, probably.
Yes, that was a very interesting.
Because the feds came and said that they're going to. How did this? What was the premise? I guess I found a little thing that just said that they were trying to get an agreement between the tribes, the irrigators, the fishermen, the conservationists, the counties, the states of Oregon and California, and then the federal agencies. So if that doesn't sound like a match made in hell, I don't know what does. But all these people are going to work together on this agreement.
Well, they did work together somewhat, because most of them had the same agenda. And that was where the rub was. Klamath Off-Project Water Users, I was a representative of that group at the time, and Siskiyou County were attending those meetings, and we were outnumbered, basically, generally speaking, like 25-2 on the voting process. Because everybody else was invited to this, they're called stakeholders, but there were environmental groups, four different tribes, Indian tribes, federal and state agencies, mostly loaded with environmental groups, and they had an agenda, and the irrigators and the counties were on their menu. There's no doubt about it. Klamath County had a representative there too, but at that current makeup of that board of commissioners is long gone now. Mainly, or at least in part, a great part, because of their position on these agreements. They sold out as far as a lot of people were concerned. So all three of our commissioners here have been replaced. And that shows where the citizens of Klamath County, and I think Siskiyou County actually has a higher percentage that are opposing this direction, but it shows that there continues to be lots and lots of opposition on both sides of the border. So these closed-door meetings were not pleasant meetings to be at. But like I said, they, for the most part, the others that were there, besides the two groups that we were at, they were somewhat on the same page. Some of them wanted a bigger page than others. That's about the only difference, actually.
And what did they tell you that you were trying? What was the like when you first started going to this stuff? What was the mission? You know, what were you trying to achieve back then? Was it dam removal?
No, dam removal was never on the table until 2008, late 2008.
Okay.
And I sent you a document there of an interview with Dean Brockbank, which was the lead counsel and vice president of Pacific Corps. He was summoned back to Virginia for a meeting, a private meeting, with the Department of Interior and a representative from the state of Oregon's governors and California's governor's office. And in that meeting, in his interview, he basically said, well, it was very plain, they were not going to allow us to relicense the dam, so get used to dam removal. And he plainly said, we're, the Pacific Corps, not in the business of taking dams out. We're there creating power, not eliminating power, clean power. But they were forced into a corner to where they didn't have an option. And unfortunately, well, I don't know if unfortunately or not, but Warren Buffett is not a dummy. He's a billionaire for a reason. He's very smart. And he purchased Pacific Corps in this process during this all this going on. And they orchestrated what I call the deal of the century, to where Pacific Corps gets out of all liability, the ratepayers and the taxpayers pay for dam removal, and they're able to walk away with their pockets full of money from the state of Oregon and California. And that was orchestrated through both the state of Oregon and the state of California legislature and the Department of Interior. They orchestrated all of that. And it was extremely onerous for the citizens, but like I said, a sweetheart deal for Pacific Corps. I mean, there's not only do they get out of liabilities and they don't have to pay for any of the dam removal costs or that any of the liabilities that goes with the sediment issues, there's something in the background there of tax credits that I've been told is worth somewhere around $1 billion. And I don't have, that's one thing I've never been able to get documentation on, but that's been the talk anyway at the state level, that there's some very hefty tax benefits for long-term tax deductions, tax credits, and things that go along with this dam removal scenario.
Do you think if Pacific Corp was guaranteed relicensing, would they be on still be on board with removal?
Not unless these incentives that they've been given or guaranteed go away. They wanted to relicense dams. I mean, they aren't huge structures. They will produce enough power, I think, for 70,000 homes. But it's clean energy. But the problem is, in the state of Oregon, our great leaders at the state level in Salem, they deemed that this is not considered renewable power because it was constructed after, I think the date was 1985 or 90, somewhere in there. If it's a dam, hydropower dam constructed before that, it's not considered renewable energy. It's too old.
It's a different kind of energy, different kind of electricity that we're not familiar with.
So if you have an old solar panel, that's not green. Your bicycle, get rid of your old bicycles. They're not green anymore.
But those closed-door meetings were not pleasant. Again, we were railroaded on a regular basis. I got you one copy of one of the protocols and confidentiality agreements that were required to be signed. When they started into the dam removal meetings, I went to those, or I attempted to go to them, and they asked me, well, there's a second, there's actually a third confidentiality agreement you were required to sign, and I said, well, I'm not going to sign that because it restricts what you can say to the media. You have to agree in principle to work towards dam removal, which is, if you're going to make an agreement on something, you want to have an open hand to look at all the options and say yes or no. But they were taking that yes or no away. If you signed on to it, you had to agree in principle to agree with dam removal. And I said, I'm not going to do that. So they didn't physically throw me out, but they very nicely said, you were not allowed at this meeting to go away.
Yeah, I was reading that agreement, it looks to me that's exactly what it says. If you don't agree with dam removal, then you can't sit in on a private meeting.
That's correct.
So what are you going for?
It
off the table.
But the thing is, there are people now who believe that this was an open and above board process the whole time, and that,
well, yeah, you were told that just here recently.
I was actually told that, yes. And so people actually believe that, and that's, I guess, why I thought it was important to go back to somebody who'd been in this from the beginning and actually could document it.
Yeah, and again, this is the one I've sent you is that's the third confidentiality agreement you had to sign to be in these meetings. I signed the first one I got in there, and somewhere in that process in late 2008 or early 2009, I finally said, I told them in these closed-door meetings, I said, look, we were told that we had to have orchestrated news releases. We couldn't go to the media. We were basically being told we had to lie to our constituents, to the public, because they were saying they wanted all this flowery language, how it's going to support this and support that, where it wasn't doing that. And I said, I refuse to do that. So I went to the media on some of these issues, and I said, this is what's actually happening in those meetings.
Oh, I bet you were super popular.
Oh, yeah. I was very on their list, to say the least. And I was told in one of those meetings, at least one of those meetings, I said, well, if you continue to do that, we are going to start an investigation with the Department of Justice. And I said, well, that's fine. You know where I live. I'm not moving. Throw me in jail if you want. I'm not going to lie to my constituents, and I'm not going to cover up for this tainted process that has an agenda.
What were they accusing? I mean, what were they going to investigate?
Oh, anything they could.
Well, I signed the confidentiality agreements, which said that you are not to go to the media. If the media asks you things, you're supposed to stay to their canned response. And I refused to do that, because the one that came up really harshly on this was the affordable power, supposedly, in these agreements. And it was very plain. It was told to us exactly point blank by John Besdek from the Department of Interior one night about 11:30 in one of these closed-door meetings that, gosh, sorry, folks, but there is no affordable power. And his exact words were, somebody asked him, said, well, what are the odds of us getting affordable power out of these agreements if we sign on? He said, a snowball's chance. That was his quote. But we were supposed to go back then and try to craft a way to sell this to our constituents. That there isn't any, it's going to be tough, but we'll get affordable power out of this. When that was a lie. And I said, I am not going to lie to the citizens of Plymouth County. Yeah, I'm not going to do it. And that's where this really came up.
Yeah, how are they going to get affordable power out of that?
They can't.
That's another little problem.
Yeah, they even in a Klamath Water and Power Association meeting here last summer, even there, it was made very plain by PacifiCorp that, oh, there's some more charges we're going to put up here. And it actually, this is the real insane part of this is, if you signed on to these agreements and signed up for their affordable power agreements, a portion of this, you would actually pay more than somebody that did not sign up.
Hmm.
It's not a lot, but that's the way the formula is right now, or was last summer. You would actually pay more for your power, and that's supposed to be affordable power. Well, they said it'll take long for this to really settle in, and it'll eventually get there, and under cross-examination, they finally say, well, it might take 10 or 20 years to get there.
Oh, my gosh, they used the Obamacare formula.
Exactly.
Well, I think it's a carbon copy of that.
Yeah, the Affordable Care Act.
Save you $2,500 per family per year.
So it's like smart growth. Yeah. It's stupid. And so if it's affordable, it's not everything. Are we in Alice in Wonderland?
If it's sustainable.
Yeah, it's sustainable, but it's not. Yeah, everything has a knot built in.
Yeah.
The other part of this, too, is we should outline the characters from some of the agencies, especially Mr. Besdek from the Department of the Interior. He's been a player in this since the beginning. Is that correct?
Not quite from the beginning. He started, I think, in 2008, was. He was kind of behind the scenes, possibly, but not. He wasn't the point person. There was another gentleman there from the Department of Interior that met with PacifiCorp, Dean Brockbank, Bettenberg, I think was his last name, and Besdek replaced him. And Besdek, he's a very personable guy. I mean, I like the person, like him as a person, but he's got an agenda.
You're so generous. What a nice man.
He's an agency guy, and he's climbing the ladder, and by whatever it takes to get there. And he's very, very sharp. I mean, and he's very, very smart, very astute. But I've been in many meetings with some of these folks, and I just point blank tell them, I said, "Well, you've got all the credentials and everything, but you're just another piece of that ignorant academia that I call you, and you have an agenda, and you don't care about the rest of the folks that's at the table here or the citizens in general."
Exactly, because a lot of this, for those who have listened to our program for a while, we've had Dr. Paul Hauser on back in probably 2012, and he was supposed to be the scientific, he was hired to be the scientific integrity officer, but when he said that dam removal was the worst possible alternative to improve the basin and the fishery, he said, that's the worst idea. That's the last possible thing we should look at. They said, well, that's what the secretary wants, so that's our top thing, and our science is all pointing to that. And on that happy note, we have to take one quick break, and we're going to come back. But I'll flip through the archives, and I'll find that show and link it to the page for today, because he wound up being a whistleblower and got fired. Da-da-da. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Be right back. Led Zeppelin does good water control, flood control music. God love them. Hey, you're joining We the People Radio. Join us online, actually, at some point in time, wethepeopleradio.us. We've got a bunch of documents there listed for you and a lot of good links. The podcast of this will be up. The archive should be here by, we'll have it up by like 2:30. So if you missed the beginning, you're going to have to go back and start at the front end, because this stuff is complicated. Okay, so let's talk a little smack about Mr. Bezdek from the Department of the Interior.
Yeah, I want to hear about him, because I hear he's a really nice guy. He's really doing everything he can.
All right, he's a weasel. Mr. Mellums is very nice.
Stop it.
Okay, so this is the thing. Mr. Bezdek, he's helping the process from the federal government side by going to different representatives of the people at different levels, and he'll go to one and say, hey, you know what, your guys are going to get hosed in this deal if you don't come on board and support this. You're the people you represent are going to, really rue the day. And so that representative might say something like, hey, you know what, it's not up to me. 80% of my constituents don't want me to do this, so I can't. And he goes, oh, okay. And then maybe the representative would say something like, you're convincing the wrong person. You need to go convince 80% of my constituents. And then Mr. Bezdek has the nasty habit of going to a different group and saying, hey, that person over there just told me he's changing his mind. He's open.
Do that from government agencies, would they?
No. Oh, he's open. He's open to change. It's like, really?
Yeah, all you got to do is get 80% of the people to change their mind, and he'll vote for it.
No, he left that out.
Oh, he left that part
No,
out.
He didn't bother to tell anybody that part. He just told them the other part.
And so minor details. Now, just not get lost in the weeds here. That's just minor details.
Yeah. So the federal government is the pot stirrer in all this. And the funny part is sometimes we forget really where the, we wind up with the farmers and the citizens in one part of Siskiyou County fighting with guys in the upper corner of Siskiyou County who are being affected by this water thing, and everybody's going to be hit with it, but it's unfortunate that the good guys are kind of lined up at each other's throats and the bad guys are getting off scot-free right now.
I mean, that's the way it was designed. You know, the government is just famously notorious for this divide and conquer, and they're so good at it. And unfortunately, I have to look at their point of view. Why would they change their tactics when they've been so successful at
exactly.
it over the decades?
And they print their own money, so, you know, no chance they'll run out of rope, you know. They just keep coming.
And Mr. Bezdek, I mean, what he's promoting is fear, and that's what's driving almost everybody that signs on to this now is fear. I met with a whole room full of supporters of these agreements here about 2 weeks ago, and I've been very critical of them because they won't come and talk to me. And I know why, because I have the background and I have the documentation, just like you're posting things on the website to back up what we're talking about here. And it's hard for them to come and visit with me. And in the 2.5 years I've been in this office, I've only had 2 people come in and talk to me that were supporters of this.
Wow.
Now I had to ask them to come in. I made an appointment with them to come in and talk to me. Well, they finally asked me to come to their meeting, and there was 25, 35 people there. And it was a very nice meeting. I was somewhat surprised. They were very cordial, very respectful, and one of them, this Becky Hyde, she says, you know, you're, I can't remember exact wording, but you're the biggest fearmonger in the Klamath County, and you're very good at it. But after sitting in that meeting for an hour, hour and a half, it was very plain that every one of those people spoke, and every one of them was basing their decisions on fear of being shut off, of being alienated, of not being able to make a living, of going bankrupt. It was pure fear motivated, 100% motivated by fear. And in the upper basin, they've divided the upper basin now also here in the Klamath Basin. I'm an irrigator in the upper basin. I went back and testified in the Senate hearing, Wyden's Senate hearing in 2013, and they out of that came another settlement agreement, which was behind closed doors, and they divided the upper basin. And basically, after the tribal interests have gotten control of the water, the irrigators on the upper basin, they basically went to those meetings begging for scraps, begging for mercy, because the tribal interests now have control of all the water through the adjudication process. So, and that this is carbon copy of that meeting I met with those guys and gals, and they were motivated 100% by fear, not by science, not by our founding fathers' principles, not by any kind of logic whatsoever. And I go back to the old story of the frog and the scorpion. The frog and the scorpion are in a flood, and there's a scorpion sitting on a rock out there. It's going to drown very shortly, and the frog goes over, and the scorpion says, "Hey, I'll hop on your back, and I will take me to safety." And he said, "But you're a scorpion. You'll kill me." He said, No, you've got to save me." So the scorpion hops on the frog's back, and he goes to the bank, and as the frog climbs on the bank, he says, "There, I made it." And the scorpion stings him. And his last breath, he says, "Why did you do that?" And he says, "It's in my nature. What are you? You're stupid." So,
scorpion.
I mean, if you're
a scorpion,
if you're
that's what I do.
The fear tactic, and you're signing on because of fear, when you know those agencies, environmental groups, and so forth are the scorpion, you know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and on the other side of the bank, something bad happens.
Yeah, many more. Even if it's in writing, it's not going to be any good to you if they're involved with it.
That's kind of true, too. All right, we're going to come back and talk about all sorts of other things. There are lots of other moving parts.
Ugliness.
So stock up on your decaf coffee. We'll be right back with you. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
This is KCNR, Shasta Redding.
You can't push the button when you want to push the button, and you can't shut it off when you want to.
Man, this is complicated.
Poor Bob.
More buttons and dials and knobs and switches. We even got a steering wheel in here.
Okay,
not sure what that's for. But
Bill's got his headphones on backwards.
Oh, shoot. Hang on. Oh.
Seriously, I wish. I'm totally posting.
Do I sound different now?
I'm posting a picture.
Well, if I pushed the button, I would have strangled myself.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. We had 5 minutes to get our act together, and no,
maybe I'm
we
from
never
Wonderland,
do.
Right? Okay. It's left, and left is right, and
there's a lot of that going on. We're not going to get into the different colored pills they took. That's a whole different.
Yeah.
It's a whole different deal.
Yeah.
All right, we were talking about F Troop on the break. Can you tell? Don't ask us how we got there. Oh, my gosh. All right.
It had something to do with our government and the way they operate.
I don't know. We got angry and we started talking about F-Droop. So you're listening to We the People Radio. We should get into that part. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. There's a ton of information there. We are speaking with Tom Malams, who is a Klamath County Commissioner. Been involved in the Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement for a very long time, since the beginning of the whole mess, and it is a mess. There's no good, you know, no good way out for anybody. Actually, everybody kind of, well, there are some people who do kind of make out on the deal, but it is kind of interesting. I was just looking at the Klamath Restoration Agreement's website, and it's funny. It's one of their little questions here. This is, these are like frequently asked questions. It says, why dam removal? Why not fish ladders? I'll only read you one sentence because the rest will make your head explode. Dam removal is the wisest approach from both economic and environmental perspectives.
Oh, my God. That's like, it's like the exact opposite.
It's like you should definitely point a gun right at your face and pull the trigger. That's just ridiculous.
Because the hole going in will be smaller than the hole going out.
Exactly.
And nobody will even notice.
Yeah, if you take out the dams and the, oh, and the hatchery, you're definitely going to have more fish.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, so now we've killed that myth. Tom, where would you like to take us at this point? How about why some of the folks are involved in this? Like why would Indian tribes be involved in this, for instance? Because that's a whole big thing of its own.
Oh, yes. Well, the federal government, the way they've drafted some of the treaties, the Klamath Treaty specifically, they have a time immemorial water right, which had never been quantified until 2013. So this was one of their big deals. They were, I'll tell it like it is, I guess. Some people say no. Some people say, oh, absolutely. They're wanting to bargain some of their water for land and money, and the tribe was paid for those, that land. A couple of times they had disputes on what the timber was worth, and they whether that was correct or not, it's a done deal as far as I'm concerned. But yet they're looking at getting a big land base out of this whole agreement, which is something that the Klamath tribe has wanted for ever since they got their status back. And Congressman Bob Smith helped champion the Klamath tribes being fed back to the on the federal recognized list, so that they get certain federal fundings and get some certain status for legislative issues and that type of thing. And in the bargaining, when he bargained with them for that, they promised that they would never seek a large bunch of water, or they would never seek a land base. Well, they didn't follow through with their word of honor there. According to Bob Smith, it wasn't put in writing, which was unfortunate.
But good thinking.
Former Congressman Bob Smith has regretted that ever since. That was back in 1986. He still has a consulting firm, I think, over in Rogue Valley, but that unfortunately was somewhat of his legacy that he really dropped the ball on. And the tribe was in dire straits and they needed some help, but it could have been done in different ways. That opened the door for them to have that political power, a political voice, and they've exercised that to the 10th degree. And the lower tribes, they have a little bit different wording in their treaties. I don't think any of them have water rights as such, not like the Klamath tribe has. They fish on the river. Some of them do, and I think those are some of the things that were in their treaty, I guess. But I'm not familiar that much with their treaties. But the Klamath tribe had a fishing and gathering right, and the state. Oregon Water Resources and the Department of Justice, I guess the administrative law judge, has determined that that's what they get now, and they quantified it in 2013. The disheartening part was that the administrative law judge that did some of this negotiations on the adjudication part was a regular participant in those closed-door meetings.
Yeah.
And that department was there on a regular basis, and that seemed horribly inappropriate, because there were water rights issues that were discussed behind those closed doors, and the administrative law judge was supposed to make that determination on the water quantification independent of something like this, a closed door meeting with different government agencies. That was we've looked at it now. I still had a little bit of faith in our process in the Water Resources Department to come up with a fair and balanced adjudication, but it did not happen. And I was wrong on that assumption. I was absolutely 100% wrong.
Gave them credit for something they couldn't possibly deliver. And, you know, the other thing we ought to bring up that I'm sure a lot of people don't know is that the guy from the Department of the Interior, Mr. Bezdek, back to him again, he used to be the lawyer for the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Huh. Yes, that's pretty snazzy. Been in the past. Yeah, it's very convenient, just coincidental, I'm quite sure. but that's where they have this predetermined agenda oftentimes, and it's just a real horrible methodology of how they've done this. But the first time I was at one of those closed-door meetings, I was talking to some of those folks, and they had just were in the process of finishing up the Nez Perce settlement. And these same players moved across the state line and just came right into this Klamath project, where they had just come from the Nez Perce project, and this is a carbon, it's kind of a carbon copy deal of what they've orchestrated here. But
and so, for the people who don't know what that did, what's the upshot of that?
The Nez Perce.
Mm-hmm.
They did basically the same thing. They divided and conquered, and they limited irrigated ground, limited water resources for the irrigators, and they signed on to it, and they still have problems there. We need a settlement here. There's no doubt. I mean, this just doesn't fit. And from the very beginning, we had three goals. All the irrigators had three goals, and that was protection from the ESA, Endangered Species Act, and the biological opinion, water certainty, and affordable power. And these agreements have nothing there substantial on any of them. In fact, the ESA and biological opinion says right in the agreements that these agreements do not affect them in any way. Power rates, we've already talked about that. There is no affordable power. Water certainty, the only certainty you have is that you're going to have a lot less than you ever had historically. You have to keep downsizing. That's what you're forced to do. Upper basin, lower basin, across the board, you're going to continually be having less and less water. So that just doesn't work for the citizens that to rely on irrigated agriculture on both Oregon and California side for this industry. We lost the timber industry to a great extent because of the spotted owl, which has been shown to be totally erroneous. It just wasn't justified at all. But it's still out there. It hasn't changed. And this water issue is the same thing. They're trying to destroy the economy of the water irrigated agriculture, which is the biggest mover we have now. And if that goes away, like the timber industry did, we're all in dire straits. And what we call the hope for state of Jefferson is all in the same boat. We're all going downstream with no paddles, no boat. And I mean, there'll be lots of water there because you can't use it. And that's just absolutely backwards from my point of view.
Well, we won't need as much water. If they charge more for it, we'll use less, and then we'll have enough.
That's right.
I think that's how they sure. Think in California. We'll just charge for it.
Yeah, we'll just charge them for it, and then they won't use it.
They won't use it.
Well, all of this, this plan to remove four dams on the Klamath River is the largest dam removal project, I think, to date.
Yes, it is. It is. And I will be very blunt with this, and I've been blunt with this in the other meetings and interviews. This was scaled down somewhat because it was originally the tribal interest and environmentalists wanted it to be a five dam removal agreement. The Keno Dam they wanted out, and they relented and said, well, we'll only go for four now, we'll go after Keno later. Now I've got people that are supporting these agreements that said that conversation never happened. And in fact, one of them in a city council meeting, he said, I don't know what meeting you were at, but I never heard that. Well, my comment back right back is, you must have stepped out, or you're just ignoring it, or you're lying, because that was a conversation that came up numerous times, especially by the tribal interest and environmentalists, that Keno Dam has got to go. And Keno Dam supplies water for some of the refuges and for a big chunk of the Klamath Project irrigators. And it also, if you're familiar with Klamath Falls, when you come into Klamath Falls off 97, you see the Lake Iwana here, the waterfront property right downtown Klamath Falls. With no Keno Dam, that all goes away. That all goes away. You'll have
it's a crater front property.
Yeah, it'll just be a rock rock front. It'll be like rock gardens out there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it'll be mud flats.
Mud flats. Yeah.
And that's what we have to look for here if Keno Dam ever goes up. But the supporters, they say, oh, that conversation never happened. That's a lie. I'll call a spade. That's a lie. And those are the kind of things that I was not allowed to talk about in those closed-door meetings because of those confidentiality agreements.
Mm.
And again, that's where I got in a little bit of a rub because I went public with that. And some of those people said, that never happened. That conversation never happened. And that is a lie. That conversation came up a number of times. I even know the people that brought it up. And some of these people that are supporting it sat on their hands in those meetings and never raised a voice about it.
You know, it never fails to amaze me how much lying has become a part of our government process. It's their first line is to lie. If they don't get caught, then they're okay. If they do get caught, well, then
but see the new
you misheard them.
No, the new lying is you just say it over and over and over. It's like the Hillary lying. You just keep saying it, and no matter what kind of evidence
there
is,
you
just
get caught. Then you have some reason that you misspoke. And,
they just do it again.
Or you heard me wrong.
The bureaucrats just tell you the same thing over again.
Yeah, don't mishear me.
They don't even tell you they're trying to clear it up. Don't mishear me.
Another one of these issues, just exactly like this. You know, you mentioned that the hatchery would go, the Iron Gate hatchery would go in this process. Iron Gate hatchery is put there as a mitigation for the dams being in place. That yes, it blocked those dams, blocked the salmon runs there. But we've had the record salmon runs since those dams were in place, and the hatchery puts out somewhere around 5 million salmon smolts a year. But it will go away. And the part that they don't like to admit to, which they have in those closed door meetings again, but never in the media and never in public, is that if they take the four dams out, hatchery's gone, they are still going to have to trap and haul the salmon the last 22 river miles past Keno Dam through that Iwana, because fish can't survive that. And they know that. So if you take out the hatchery where you could catch the fish, you're going to have to build a new set of trapping mechanism at Keno and then truck them that last 22 miles up into the river. So if this was about fish, why would you take out the dams when you're still going to have to trap and haul the fish anyway? So it just makes absolutely no sense, which
more brilliance.
The whole thing doesn't make any sense.
All right. We have a caller on the line. That's what the barking is. just in case you thought...
Rover, you're on line one.
Tom had suddenly changed species there. No, we have dogs in the background. We're going to take a really quick break, though, and we'll come back and find out who owns those dogs and all the rest of the madness if you haven't already bashed your head against the table enough times. It'll be fun. We'll have fun. Won't we, Tom?
Oh, it's always fun.
We're going to make it fun.
Some are funner than others.
You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped. My give a damn's busted.
You're listening to We the People Radio on AM 1460 KCNR.
How high's the water, mama? 5 feet high and rising. How high's the water, papa? She said it's 5 feet high and rising. Well, the rails are washed out north of town. We gotta head for higher ground. We can't come back till the water goes down 5 feet high and rising. Well, it's 5 feet high and rising.
Nice. You are rejoining We the People Radio. We have Jack on the line from Crescent Mills.
How you doing, Aaron?
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, about as good as going to get.
Yeah, you've been listening to this, so you're probably ready for either a nap or you got to go out and chop some wood and burn off some energy.
It's a little warm outside right now.
Yeah, probably chopping wood's out. So what'd you have for us this morning?
Well,
this afternoon?
After listening to what's going on, it sounds like to me this whole thing is involved like a UN Agenda 21, getting control of all the land and all this, and then the groups of people put together has been Delphi, you know, the Rand Delphi technique of dividing people, and at the end their predetermined agenda. And then now we have Obama and his executive order taking over all the water everywhere.
Yeah. And you can kind of see all the spears are pointing in the same direction, huh?
Right. And people, like he said, is being divided and conquered and all this. And I don't know. I'm at a point here. I gave you some information on the public officers and employees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're fiduciary responsibility to
sure.
uphold their duties to protect the property and all this stuff. And it seems like to me everybody in the public officers are doing everything against the public to undermine
Actually, in this particular engineered disaster, you have a lot of public officials that are fighting for the people against other public officials, but it's not all representatives. A lot of it is done by, you know, the stakeholders. So they are people who represent themselves. So you don't have any all. There is no all, and there is no nothing. You know, just you just got a lot of moving parts. Have you looked at this issue before, or is this the beginning for you?
Well, I've heard about it, and just listening in on it. There's just too much going on. We got our issues here locally in our county.
Sure.
Dealing with water and all this stuff with the ranchers, and it just seems like everywhere you turn there's divide and conquer, or trying to take away everything, and one group of people want to run the other group of people, and it just seems like it never ends. Nobody's ever satisfied. They just want to control everything. And it's just like in Montana there, the EPA takes away 1 million acres and two cities or two communities and put in the Indian Reservation and the Riverton Act or whatever they called it. And it just seems like the federal government's trying to take over everything. And people are, like he says, are getting scared to fight back, but they need to go into the laws and challenge all these public employees. What authority do they have to do any of this?
Sure. Well, we've got them. We've got you've got a lot more than just public employees in this one. So we have a lot
yeah.
of yeah. You know, you
well,
got
we got the NGOs wanting to control everything.
Exactly.
That's the main problem. Is from what I can start to gather now, it seems like the NGOs have absolute all to say, and the individual go get lost. And
in a lot of cases. So Tom,
yeah.
Weigh in on this. Thanks, Jack.
Sure. I can give you an example. Bye. Of, I think it was actually the first closed-door meeting I went to in Sacramento on these things. And I have to say, the people that were there, they didn't recognize me because I had never been to one of these before. And I kind of wandered around a little bit before the meeting started and was I won't say I was eavesdropping, but I certainly wasn't closing my ears either. But I got into listening to a conversation of some from, I think one was a federal employee and one was a state employee on a couple of the agencies, and they were bragging, openly bragging. They said, "Gosh, we never thought we'd ever get to this point where we might actually get these dams taken out." And the other guy says, "Yeah, and you know, this is a permanent funding stream for us for the next 15 years at least." And the other guy says, "Yeah, and by then we'll be retired." And I don't care. I mean, this was their dream come true. They didn't have to fight budgets if this goes forward.
Because it's supposedly a restoration of the basin there.
Yes. They would be funded for until they were retired, and they didn't care. They were more worried about their job than they were the environment. They were more worried about their funding stream. And that was a horrible first meeting to go to, and that was my initiation into those closed-door meetings, which was not very pleasant.
Maybe it was kind of good. At least you didn't have to wonder who was doing what. Like, there's one little thing on there. There's a ton of stuff on this frequently asked questions thing, but there's one that really gets to the heart of the disagreement, because you have people in agriculture who should be working together who are now deeply divided, to put it mildly. It's interesting, from the pro-restoration agreement folks, their Q&A thing is, do the Klamath agreements do the Klamath agreements increase water security for irrigators? That's the $64,000 question. Their answer is, and I love it, yes, to the extent possible under existing law. The Klamath Basin Restoration Agreement describes the allocated water delivery to the irrigated project based on the water year type. The amount available for farmers is greater in wetter years. I'm sorry, that's not a yes.
No, it's a political answer which doesn't answer the question.
No, it totally doesn't. And you could read the second paragraph, which I won't make everyone crazy with, but it's the same thing. It goes in another circle. So is there a guarantee of water? Is it worth it to sign on? Are you guaranteed water if you do it?
No. Again, no. You're not guaranteed water. The only thing you are guaranteed is that you will have less water. And on a continuing basis, and they talk about there's a block of water guaranteed. Well, this year was a prime example. They're supposedly running under this agreement's premise now. Well, they had they said, well, the Bureau of Reclamation said we're going to get X amount of water. Well, in steps NIMS and Fish and Wildlife say, well, sorry guys, we've looked at the river, and it's our determination, which you can't dispute. If they say so, that's it. We want a spring flush and a fall flush of 16,000 acre feet of water in each one of those. So that's 32,000 acre feet comes right off your top of your so-called guaranteed block of water you had. Well, that didn't go over very well, but still, the irrigators weren't willing to raise too much of a fuss, because they're still afraid that they will be more vindictive. Well, as it turned out, they didn't do the spring flush because we had some real good rains, and so it really wasn't warranted in the first place, but it was going to be a PR and a political nightmare to do that, so they backed off of that one, but they're still going to do the fall one. But you have to remember, if you sign on to these agreements, which these irrigators have, and all these agencies have, you have what's called an obligation to support. And it's in these agreements, numerous places, you have to support legislation, administrative processes. You can't oppose any of these things. You have to walk in lockstep with whatever they put out there. You can't oppose. So in the past, we've had a lot of people that were leaders in the opposition that now are basically under a gag order, what I call a gag order. I've worked hand in hand with some of these irrigators in the upper basin and lower basin for decades on these issues. Now they cannot even open their mouth in opposition, because if they do, they're afraid they'll get water turned off. And I've been in meetings where some of the state legislation was being discussed, and they said, well, because they're interacting the groundwater and surface water in the state of Oregon now, they actually drafted language, administrative rules that are consistent with the agreements, which aren't legislated yet. We have state legislation that are consistent with a non
legislated federal agreements, which makes no sense, but it ties ground and surface water together. But they told me in these meetings, I'm an irrigator, I've got a water right out of the surface and the groundwater, but said, if you sign these agreements, you'll be able to irrigate. But if you don't sign the agreements, you will not be allowed to irrigate. And that's blackmail. I don't care what you say. That's blackmail. And they say, well, we never really said that. But, oh, yes, I've got five or six people that were there and said, oh, yes, you did say that. And that's the kind of coercion that's going on in these meetings that try to force people into joining to sign on. And it's just a... people are desperate. I mean, absolutely desperate. And it's not the way our country was formed. It's not the principles that our country has. And this just goes absolutely against everything that I believe is guaranteed under the Constitution. And it's just a deplorable way to go. And I told the people that I met here a couple of weeks ago about that were supporters, I told them finally at the end of the meeting, I said, I want to listen to what you say, and I want to dwell on it, and let you know. And I let some of them know that about 4 or 5 days later, I said, you know, I know the plight you're in. I know the fear factor. I'm an irrigator, too. But it's not in my makeup to capitulate under these kind of conditions. If they had something that was sellable, it would be different. They don't meet any of the criteria that's needed, and I can't in good conscience make that kind of a decision to support this direction, because it's absolutely wrong. There's some little bits and pieces that are good in it, but I'd say 80% of it is absolutely against the citizens, against everything we believe in here.
Sure, so and it's all against the producers. That's the biggest thing. At the heart of this deal is a huge agricultural industry that benefits a lot more people than the ones who live there. So if we, you know, I saw signs down at the Sacramento Capitol a long time ago. There was a big rally down there, and they had a whole bunch of signs that said, if you love foreign oil, you're going to love foreign food. And so, you know, that's kind of where we are again. If we don't grow our own food here in the country, we are just like all those third world countries that count on our charity. We won't be able to provide that charity to them because we won't have the food to share. And we'll be counting on them to give us food. So now, you know, now you take it from a squabble in the Klamath Basin, which is kind of how some people like to view it, to a national security issue. I mean, it's a piece. Absolutely. It's a piece of what makes our country solid and sovereign. Anyway, Bob's got some great music for us, and we have a couple commercials we need to play. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to We the People Radio. We're here with Tom Malam's talking about the KBRA.
I was home in Macon, Georgia. I kept my daddy in the Macon jail. He said, son, if you keep your hands clean, you won't hear those bloodhounds on your trail. I fell in with bad companions, robbed the mail up in Tennessee, and I got caught way up in Nashville. Now, well, they locked me up and they threw away the key.
Good thing we mentioned the devil. It's perfect for this program. Not us, just the topics. Yeah. Oh, evil things. So you're rejoining We the People Radio. We have Liz on the line calling us from beautiful Scott Valley. How's it going?
Well, howdy, Aaron. How are you? It's finally getting warmer today, but not as hot as down there in Redding.
Yeah, we're super excited about it. Woohoo!
Oh, I bet you are.
We'll be running from the station to the truck, from the truck to the grocery. That's the plan.
Oh boy. Well, I wanted to thank Tom. I've known Tom for a couple of years now in Sister County. We reached out to Klamath County in Oregon and created a Bi-State Alliance group just so that we could share information. And Tom has just been a tireless leader. I so appreciate him. He's a pretty nice, mild-mannered guy, but he sure has exposed some lies for us and some fraud. And, yeah, it's frustrating, but at least it's nice to know that there really is a lot of incorrect things going on, secrets. Siskiyou County itself, several of our board members, we have supervisors of our county, did attend a couple of the KBRA meetings, but the KBRA group would not allow Siskiyou County as a county to participate, and so they very much were secret meetings. So I just want to say thank you to Tom.
What was the excuse for them not allowing? I mean, you guys are all affected by this. You're the ones who are downstream from the dams that would be removed in their perfect world. How do they figure you don't get to be at the meeting?
Yeah, three of the four dams they want to remove are in Siskiyou County, so it was really odd that they wouldn't allow Siskiyou County to be a stakeholder. I don't know what their reasoning was, except that possibly they knew that we would be a very loud voice against the removal of the Klamath dams.
Well, you know,
I don't think they wanted to hear it, so they just shut us out.
If you're going to oppose it, just stay home. Lovely.
Well, I appreciate the compliment, Liz, but I've got lots of help here and on both sides of the border that are fighting this, and you're part of some of those groups that are assisting us in fighting this real definite agenda. But Siskiyou County was finally allowed to come into those closed-door meetings at the last there. They got some wording in the protocols that they allowed them to do. It was very conditional. But they did participate in the dam removal, at least for a time anyway. But it was a very, just a very contentious time and showing that the real loss of confidence in the federal government. Because Siskiyou County, you mentioned the dams, absolutely. In the tax revenue loss alone, I think Siskiyou County was offered $20 million at one time for offsets for their tax loss and any kind of economic damages of any kind. And their own government federal report, that CDM report, showed that there was going to be at least $86 to $90 million of economic damage. And Klamath County is the same way. We were offered $3.4 million in economic offsets, but we added it up. The tax losses is going to be a $1.2 million per year on a permanent basis. So that doesn't work. I mean, Siskiyou County was totally correct in opposing all this, because it's just a total, you're offered pennies on the dollar for what your losses are actually going to be. And when you sign that thing, part of that section that signed that money, and Siskiyou County never, that $20 million was never budgeted either for Siskiyou County. But even if you took the money, and we took the 3.4, we had to give up all rights to sue for any damages in the future, for loss of property values, anything to do with the sediment. We couldn't sue anybody for anything. That was it. You take your 30 pieces of silver and you go hide in a corner somewhere, because that's all you're going to get. And that was just totally against everything I believe in.
Well, the other part that I think people are confused, the folks on this phone are not confused, but there are a lot of people out there that have been misled, that when they say take out four dams, they don't literally mean they're going to take them out, lock, stock, and barrel. They're going to punch a hole in them, which they call breach. They're going to poke a hole in them and then make them basically explode, make them fail.
Yep, and they aren't going to take out all that structure. Originally, they were going to take out all evidence of the dams, but that's going to cost way too much, they finally figured out. You're right, they're going to notch them, and that's probably all they will do for quite some time, because I think there's one of the flumes that goes down the river for miles. It has asbestos in it. And it's got miles of this stuff.
That's going to totally improve the fishery.
To put it,
yeah, and that's going to improve the fishery and make it a lot more natural. That'll be great.
Oh, absolutely, sure.
Yeah, needless to say, what's going to happen the first time they have a lot of rain and floodwaters cover everything and spread that stuff out all over your farm.
Well, and those fish will be good eating too.
Oh, man.
Jeez.
Yeah. They say that it has a potential of ruining the fish habitat for clear to the ocean. They could sterilize the entire Klamath River clear to the ocean, and that's because they're just going to let that 22 million cubic yards of sediment go down the river, and not all of it will go down the river, but a good part of it will. And that's just absolute backward thinking, and it's been proven other places around the state here in the last few years that this modeling that they do does not work, because I'm not sure if you've heard of the Savage Rapids and Goray Dam on the Rogue River. They were taken out here a number of years ago, and they've had nothing but problems. They've got chromium-6, mercury in the water, the drinking water, the salmon spawning areas are covered up with the silt, muck, and the intakes for the irrigation districts are filled up. And the interesting part is there's a company called River Design that did the modeling on all those dam removals over there in the Rogue Valley. And guess who has the modeling contract on dam removal on the Klamath River? Same company.
Hey, it is just like Obamacare.
Yeah, now why would you have a company that has proven record of failure, have them have the largest dam removal project with probably the most sediment to deal with, toxic sediment, and they're going to be entrusted with saying, oh yeah, just breach the dams and let the sediment go.
What do they say when you confront them with this type of evidence or theory that this is what's going to happen? When what's their response to that? It's not going to happen. That's not true.
Yeah, they just say, oh no, those were just anomalies. Well, it's more than anomalies when you have a history of that happening with the same modeling concept with the same company, and to have a proven negative track record, and then give them the largest contract that's ever been out there. I've even got a neighbor in the upper basin that had the same company do some restoration work on their place, and they finally threw them off their property. They were so incompetent. And it's a horrible way to go. I mean, they weren't doing the project in a timely manner or in a scientific manner, and they really botched it up. And these people finally said, go away. We don't even want to finish this project. We've had it with you. And this company still to this day, but that property on the Sprague River was still listed on their website as a shining example of success. Wow. And it was anything but a success.
Well, but I'm not a scientist, but can't they take like a core sample of what's behind that dam and show them what's in it and what's going to flow down the river? I mean, that seems pretty simple.
Yeah, they've done that, and they've shown that there are toxic substances there that are toxic and fatal to fish. They know it's there. But they did some of their core sampling done with under the Stillwater, I think, science report. I think they sampled in specific areas, like mercury will, if I remember right, mercury has a habit of collecting around the shore banks closer to shore, but they didn't test for mercury there. They went farther out where they knew there probably wouldn't be any, or it'd be a smaller number. So it's how they skew the science. But there were, Siskiyou County, I think, had somebody do some core sampling and showed that they had dioxins, mercuries, and a bunch of other things that were definitely in that sediment, that if you and I put that down the river, we would be fined or thrown in jail.
Oh, you wouldn't see the light of day.
Well, that's why they need federal legislation before this can go
protecting
forward.
Protecting them, because they know what's going to happen
sure.
when they blow
you have
those
to
dams.
Indemnify them against that.
Yeah.
Because that I mean, that's a gift that'll
keep on giving.
Yeah, you
take that away,
giving.
And they'll never let you take those dams out because nobody wants to be responsible for what's back there,
mm-mm.
which should tell you
yes.
there's an issue.
Again. Yeah, it's kind of right there, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's...
I know we should have had a fifth grader listen to this and then ask them at the end what they think.
Can I come in here with a word?
Yeah.
Hypocrisy.
Oh, yeah, that's a good... We haven't thrown that one around yet. Well, Liz, so who, you know, just so we don't let that, the point that your supervisors have been locked out of this meeting, so that doesn't fade away. So who represents, you guys did a ballot measure, it was an advisory thing, what was it, 3 years ago, 4 years ago? When was Measure G?
Yeah, 2012.
Wow. Okay, so it was a while back, and like 79% of the county said, no, we're not in favor of dam removal. No. So who represents all those people?
That's the Siskiyou County Water Users Association. It's a grassroots group that organized in 2010 to specifically address the KBRA and the potential of having the dams removed. In this case, we're the ones crying, save the dams, instead of save the trees like the greenies do. We're wanting to save the dams, and that has been their there's been several different presidents of that group. Rich Marshall is chairman right now, and but the group has worked really hard to help to educate the public on a variety of reasons, which you've been talking about, why the dams need to stay in, and most people just in general don't want the dams out. They know the dams are there for flood control and for water and for power. And the reason why I threw in the word hypocrisy is I think it was April 1st, 2011. I know it was April 1st. It was April Fool's. But I think it was 2011. There was still the Department of Fish and Game, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, several federal agencies came over to Yreka and held an informational meeting. And Mark Stouffer, high up official in the Redding Department of Fish and Game, which it was Fish and Game at the time, was specifically asked how many years will it destroy the riverbed that will affect the salmon, basically the endangered species coho salmon. If those dams are removed. And this was back when they weren't looking towards breaching so much as to take, you know, all of the dams out. And he admitted right there in front of everybody, huge crowd, that it would take at least 3 years. Well, any of us that know anything about, have learned anything about coho salmon, they return like clockwork every 3 years. And we also know the government can't get anything done within its specified allotted time. I'm making a bold statement there. And so we're looking at well over 3 years that there will be damage to the environment, to the water quality, to the riverbeds for the returning returning salmon. And he flat out admitted, yeah, it'll take 3 years. And okay, that's when it hit me. This is the first time I've seen anything trump the ESA. And the KBRA agreement will do that. And it's okay for them to kill coho salmon, but not for the rest of us to even consider reducing water or whatever that might affect coho salmon. That's just nothing but hypocrisy.
God forbid one dies accidentally on your property. You know,
well, it's going to force those folks to have to buy their endangered species coho salmon from Costco for the next 3 years.
that's
unbelievable. That
we should not let a show go by that we don't bring that up. Duh. All right, last really fast break, and then we'll have just a minute or so with Tom. Tom, be thinking of your elevator speech when we come back. Thanks, Liz.
Okay, thank
Good
you.
Seeing you yesterday.
See you. Bye-bye.
Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Smoke on the water.
We didn't have much time. for something.
Looking for something.
Something sacred I love. But the river is
wide.
And it's too hard to cross.
Too hard to cross.
Yeah, I'm still looking for something. I'm looking for some common sense in this whole thing. Oh, man. All right, Tom. So if you were going to leave people with a message on where to go, what to look for, how to do more research, I guess, what they can expect upcoming, what would you give them?
Well, I would say leave them with this. We have groups that are working on pushing for off-stream storage and juniper removal, those type of things that will, and they're actually getting criticized for their efforts by the supporters of this agreement direction. Again, if this was about fish, all would be working together for solutions that would be supported by all the citizens and our federal legislators, which does not exist right now.
Yeah, I love it when they act like this is the only solution there is.
This is all you could do.
Yeah,
all
you it's, can it's do. Their way or no way. This, they are the bully in the room, and it's their way or no way, but I don't agree with that. These other simple solutions, not simple, but common sense solutions should go forward with or without agreements. I mean, that needs to be part of them, and they've been excluded out.
We're going to have to do another program.
Yeah. A lot of issues.
I kind of knew that was going to happen. We had kind of a list. Yeah, we did like five things. thank you for being our hostage today.
You betcha. Thank you. Anytime.
We really appreciate it. That was Tom Malams. If you guys have anything you'd like to weigh in on, get a hold of us. Our information's on wethepeopleradio.us. We'll see you next week.
And this is KCNR, Shasta Redding.